You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, January 7th, 2015, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Good evening, boys.
How is everyone doing for our first episode that we're recording in 2015?
Awesome.
Excellent.
I'm spectacular.
Have you guys made all of your New Year's resolutions?
Just I made
oh,
none.
Yes.
Why not, Jay?
Because why set yourself up for failure?
Well, don't fail.
Do set it. Yourself up for a success.
or what you need, you just need to choose resolutions that are within reason and you know you can accomplish. Just, you got to do it. For example, this year, I promised myself this in the past, but I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to build a garden, a vegetable garden in my backyard.
A bum garden?
No, a vegetable garden.
Those are fun.
In my backyard, right. And that's an absolutely entirely reasonable resolution to make. I can absolutely follow through on that. And if I don't, it just means I wasn't motivated enough to do it. So, but I'm doing it. I'm declaring it now and I will do it this summer.
I want to become the master of time, space, and dimension.
Just go to the supermarket.
Equally easy to become the. Well,
yeah, but I don't look at that as a. I don't look at that like a vegetable garden as a New Year's resolution. That's like you just have plans to do something this spring. Like it's usually to me, it's like something that is reinventing yourself or a huge, very difficult thing that you're trying to do, like lose weight, quit smoking, like something along those lines.
Jay, I get what you're saying, Jay. That kind of makes sense. But that is a valuable skill now that I think about it. It's especially valuable, you know, during the zombie apocalypse. Being able to grow your own food is kind of key. So I might be heading over to your place when the dead start walking.
I'll need a few pointers from Steve. You already have a few years on me on your garden.
Yeah, I've been growing a garden with my daughters for the last 15 years.
All right, I just came up with a resolution.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Right. Too late, man.
Evans, no, it's not. Could do it. Right, it's the 7th. Evan's building a garden. I'm going to build my son a spaceship.
Nice.
Oh, Jay, I've got URLs for you so that you can see how this guy made these wicked spacecraft panels, light up panels. The guy was beautiful. It was like the coolest thing I've ever seen a dad build for his kid.
Awesome. Yeah, that's what I want to do because he loves lights and knobs and buttons and everything.
It's not as easy as you think, man.
I have plans to build something too. Julie and I are planning on building a hobbit hole.
Oh,
you
that's
are
cool.
going to do that.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean? Like a real one you can go into? Or just
a facade? Well, we're going to start with just the facade because that's going to be a lot easier than building one you can go into. Mainly because of.
Not safe, dude.
The work, the landscaping that would be necessary. But we have a nice retaining wall with a drop off in our backyard. It's a perfect location just to put a facade up. So we're going to do that and build a garden around
that's
it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but the door won't open.
That's all right, because that'd be too dangerous anyway. Collapse.
But guys, we have a collective New Year's resolution for the four of us, and that is we're going to make the SGU more awesome than ever.
Hells yeah!
Oh yeah!
So it's a new year. We'd like to experiment with. We don't want to change the basic format of the show because I think it kind of works, and I don't think we need to do any radical changes, but we do like to experiment with new segments and switch things up a bit. And this year, we kind of have no choice. This is our first episode that we're recording PR, or post-Rebecca, so we did have to shuffle things up a little bit. This is all, everything's an experiment, so give us feedback if you like new segments or don't like them. We'll be making adjustments before we settle in to any kind of new format. A lot of people have asked us if we are planning on replacing Rebecca. We're going to have an eye out, obviously, for somebody that we think would be perfect for the show. But we're in no rush. And in the meantime, we're just going to have a lot of guests and guest rogues on. We're just going to play it by ear, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll freewheel it a little bit right now.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
So we're going to start off with a new segment that Bob is going to head up. Bob, we're calling it the Forgotten Heroes of Science. Did you like that?
Or you had said, well, I had recommended Forgotten Superheroes of Science.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit of alliteration going on there, which so Forgotten
Superheroes of Science? Okay, that sounds good.
Forgotten Superheroes of Science.
So this is people who made significant contributions to science, but are not household names. They're not as well known as they should be, given their contributions.
They're not household names yet. We're about to help that out, though.
Yeah, we'll see. So who are you starting up the segment with?
So for my first episode of Forgotten Superheroes of Science, I picked a trailblazing American astronomer, Annie Jump Cannon. Now, that name might sound familiar, especially if you paid really close attention to Neil deGrasse Tyson's Cosmos last year. She was highlighted in one of his episodes, and I thought, wow, this person was pretty damn pivotal, and I'm a big astronomy buff, and how could I never have heard of her? So I was really surprised. Annie was born December 11th, 1863 in Dover, Delaware, about a century before I was born. In 1896, she was hired by the Harvard Observatory at 50 cents an hour to classify bright southern hemisphere stars. Now, other sources claim that she was paid 25 cents a day, which is quite a difference. But whatever it was, she was almost certainly paid less than the secretaries at Harvard were paid. And I would think astronomers would deserve at least something, at the very least, commensurate with the secretaries. So doing her typical classification tasks, she inherited some classification schemes from previous people that were doing her work, and none of them seemed good for her. So she developed her own scheme that involved spectral classification. So what happened would be that her team would receive the spectra of stars, which would be produced by a prism showing the rainbow of colors, but with absorption lines missing, meaning that certain chemical elements in the star are absorbed by that specific wavelength that was missing of radiation. And the thicker the absorption line, the more of that element that there was. So using this method, she came up with her scheme of using the letters OBAFGKM, which you, I'm sure many of you have heard about, especially if you consider the mnemonic that is often used to remember it. O, be a fine guy or girl, kiss me. And so using those letters, you can classify stars from hottest to coldest. And then you could also throw a number 0 to 9 after it to kind of bridge the gap within that range for each letter. So, for example, an O star would be stars between 30,000 and 60,000 K. And they would be blue stars. And you could throw the numbers afterwards to fill in those gradations of temperatures between those two numbers.
Now, Bob, so, what I've read is that Annie inherited the OBAFGKM classification system, the letters, that she kept them the same so as not to confuse previous texts. But she just came up with new definitions for them, and that she came up with the O, be a fine girl, kiss me mnemonic.
Yeah, so Steve, one of the schemes that she inherited had actually over 20, it was 22 different classifications, and she simplified it down OBAFGKM. So sure, a lot of the letters could have been the same, but she's the one that used those specific ones and only those for the first time, it appears. So then later on, this method, it was determined that this method could be used to classify stars by their surface or effective temperature, which is valuable information. So this became the Harvard classification system, which was the standard used by many astronomers for generations, all astronomers really, for generations. The one that's used now is a variant of that, still using those same letters, but from what I could tell, she was the first one to use those specific letters. So she was actually quite adept, as you could imagine. She could classify 3 stars per minute just by looking at their spectral lines, and she has the honor of being the person with the most stellar classifications that anyone ever before, 300, or even until to this day, 350,000 stars that she classified that are published in the Draper catalogs. So Cannon received many honorary degrees from many different colleges. She was the first woman to receive an honorary doctorate from the University of Oxford in 1925. She was the first woman to hold an officer position in the American Astronomical Society. And all of this, she accomplished all of this while being almost completely deaf throughout her entire career.
Wow.
It was a scarlet fever.
Yeah. So people read up on Annie and her amazing contributions, mention her to friends sometimes, like when you're talking about spectral stellar classifications. And more
comes up all the time.
Right.
And cocktail parties.
And lots of other reasons too. And more people should know about what she did.
And her career is like iconic for women being neglected in the sciences at this time, right? She was educated. She was smart. She was obviously diligent. And yet she had no opportunities as a scientist simply because she was a woman. Imagine what she might have accomplished, you know, if she had the freedom to pursue her career. like any man at the time could. So it's she made the most of her career that she could, given, you know, to the degree to which she was being held back. But it was, you know, just pure sexism that she wasn't allowed to accomplish even more.
Yep.
Yeah, and she and others like her at this time were inspirations to the giants that followed her. So
we are the first show that we record in each new year. Traditionally, we do psychic predictions. So what we're going to start by covering predictions that there's so many, but we're going to just pick our favorites. Predictions that psychics made for 2014, and we're going to see how they did. This is usually a fun exercise. I like to point out that psychic predictions tend to fall into one of a few categories. These are ways in which psychics give the impression that they're predicting the future when in fact they're just guessing. So one thing they do is to make vague predictions, right? They make predictions that are lacking in details, that are not tied down with any specifics, and that therefore, after the fact, can be made to match many, many different outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Another kind of prediction they make are very high probability hits, right? Mm-hmm. Like 50-50 types of guesses, like which politician is going to win a particular election, for example.
Right.
There's a lot of false specificity, meaning making predictions that sound specific but really aren't. My favorite example that I've mentioned before is saying, oh, I see an airplane, there's red in the tail. Like, that sounds kind of specific until you realize like 60% of all airlines have red in their logo.
Yeah.
Open-ended, meaning there's no date, no location, no specific target. And the other one is simply unverifiable. They're either completely subjective or they're utterly meaningless. There is no way you could ever falsify or verify the prediction. So with that in mind, let's go through some of our favorite predictions for 2014. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. This prediction is from Lamont Hamilton. And he said one of my favorites was that he said that there would be a discovery in 2014 that diseases can be transmitted or transferred by pure thought from one location to another.
Oh, yeah.
Pure thought. And of course, pure that thought. Did not happen.
Deepak would be proud.
Another great one that actually I would sorely love to have come true. He said that scientists will discover and prove that we live in an identical twin universe that's a mirror opposite of ours. The mirror opposite. Okay, yeah, that's a nice little twist. Uh-huh. I mean, I haven't seen that
mirror,
since
a
cheesy like 60s sci-fi movie where it literally was the letters were. You know, a mirror projection. So, mirror reflections.
Looking glass. Yeah.
Oh, this was a good one. This one was fairly specific. The Nobel Prize in Chemistry will go to, Alvar Aalto's, Seemann and Merkin for their work on DNA. But of course they basically just did not win. It was, two other guys. So that was a nice try, but, no, didn't happen.
All right. I have Jemima Packington. Any of you guys ever hear of her?
No.
She is an esperomancer.
Ooh.
You ever heard of that?
No, what the heck? What, she good with this? Oh, she reads asparagus.
She reads asparagus.
Oh, awesome. The asparagus gal from Britain.
My God, she's British.
Please.
She throws asparagus up into the air and then reads based upon how it lands.
That reminds me of the movie Willow, where the guy had rolled the bones, basically. He took the bones in a cup.
It's tea leaf reading, bone reading. Whatever.
Remember Willow? That movie was awesome.
Of course.
I love that movie. I have not seen it in probably, since 20 years. I wonder if it's held up.
All right. So here are Jemima's predictions. I wonder if she has any nieces or nephews for 2014.
Ah, nice. Connect
the dots, folks.
She said there would be a storm in January.
What?
Wow. Weather will bring misery to Britain and the weather will deteriorate in the Far East as the year progresses. Okay, so I looked up January, Great Britain, weather, and yeah, it was January in Great Britain, but it was wetter than average, but not anything unusual. They said it was the mildest January since 2008.
Hey, what are you trying to say?
So that's, again, you know, there's going to be bad weather in January in a northern climate. Okay. And then this one, deteriorate. Weather will deteriorate in the Far East as the year progresses. That's one of those unverifiable ones. What does that mean? A major entertainment mogul will retire.
Whoa. How did she know?
Yeah, I couldn't find a specific. Impossible. Couldn't find a specific one. A musical supergroup will split.
That never happens.
Yeah. The only one I could find was Camp Freddy. You guys ever hear of Camp Freddy?
Your daughter probably has, but
no.
I've never.
Some obscure group. A band going to break up over the course of the year. What are the odds that that's going to happen? There will be a string of celebrity divorces.
No.
Mm-hmm.
But this really one, tough. She really went out on a limb for this next one. Middle Eastern politics will give rise to yet more concerns.
No.
I mean, I thought Middle East would have completely settled down.
How could we ever know these things without asparagus?
Why is that
it's impossible.
Loss of a senior member of the royal family will give rise to great sadness and the end of an era. The end of an era. So I looked up British royal deaths in 2014, and the only one I could find was the death of Camilla's younger brother. So the end of an era, my friends.
Yep, Camilla's younger brother. Don't even know his name, but there he is.
It was kind of, his death. It was kind of a freak accident. Yeah, it was sad, and the royal family was apparently devastated. But hardly senior, unless by senior she means old. So yeah, some old person's going to die. That's a minor royal, and there was no end of an era. So again, that's one of those falsely specific ones. It seems like something really specific, but I just looked up royal deaths and I think people underestimate how many royals there are. If you're counting all the earls and dukes and all this stuff. So you can claim a hit if any royal dies, you know, and then it seems specific even though it really wasn't.
Sure.
Yeah. Worldwide, this is one that you cannot possibly verify. Worldwide, businesses large and small will finally realize that a holistic approach to employment of their workforce is imperative for healthy growth.
What?
Yeah. So holistic hiring
holistic.
Practices.
Holistic, great. Yeah.
I don't even know what the hell that means.
Yeah, right? Totally
it is.
Unverifiable.
It's mumbo jumbo nonsense.
So that's our asperomancer. Good examples of all the typical psychic BS.
Well done. Well done. Well, have you ever heard of Psychic Nikki? She's the psychic to the stars. Which psychic isn't? I mean.
Yeah, why aren't there any psychics to the poor people?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. I know.
Evan,
because psychic
you can't, you can't make a living being a psychic to the poor person. Now, Steve, you were talking about different kinds of predictions and, you know, the way psychics sort of make these predictions. Another aspect of psychic predictions is that it's sort of this Gish Gallop in which they throw out so many things.
Yeah, definitely.
That one or two or three hits, you know, are bound to happen if you throw enough crap at the wall, basically. She had hundreds of
predictions. Call that the gunshot approach.
Yes. Or the scattershot approach.
Yeah, buckshot, yeah.
There's lots of examples. And I'll start, Jay, and then we'll go to you. This is a triple header, okay? A giant sinkhole in Egypt. That's a prediction. And then trouble around the pyramids in Egypt. They may sink.
What they were sinking.
And then she says sinkholes worldwide. This woman had something about sinkholes for 2014 that is just off the charts.
You can tell that they're affected by the news, right? Like, you know, sinkholes are in the news and then these start popping up in their predictions.
And it just so happens that if you do a cursory search, the world's largest sinkhole is in Egypt. So the chances that another sinkhole is going to open up somewhere in Egypt, not exactly going out on a limb there.
I absolutely love her hatred of the Empire State Building, because she thinks the Empire State Building is going to tip. And then she said there's also going to be a terrorist attack. So she was on a little roll there with the Empire State Building.
And not just the Empire State Building, but New York in general. Did you see the one where she said, a shark will kill somebody at Coney Island, New York?
Yeah, that was good. Yep.
My initial thought was, no, it wasn't a shark. It was a jet. Hello? Anyone know that?
No.
Hello?
Yeah,
West Side
jets,
Story?
Yeah.
Sharks and jets. The 50 and older crowd listening to our show might know that. And a terrorist attack in New York City.
Yeah.
you know, which is vague. Hello, vague. And I don't think there was a terrorist attack in New York City in 2014.
Well, I thought her food riots worldwide gave me a chuckle. All I could picture was like the food riot scene from Animal House. Like, what do you mean food riots worldwide? Like Steve was saying, that could
like the Hunger Games. Anything. Like, you're watching the movies.
Yeah. Shortage of food and people going crazy. She really does focus on the negative here, doesn't she? Because, multiple shootings at Rockefeller Center in New York.
Yeah.
Civil war breaking out in the United States. The CN Tower in Toronto will collapse in fire and explosion. Boy, I mean, does she have anything? Oh, and this one. How about a gorilla will eat its trainer?
Well, that's because of the food riot. Right? That's so weird, though, right? Like, where'd that come from? Evan, how about this one? Hello, vague. More cyber attacks. Cyber attacks are happening at all moments from here on into infinity, that they will always exist, right? They're happening every second of every hour of every day.
That's what they call in the trade a guaranteed hit.
Yeah.
That way she's not 0 for 1,000 in the year 2014. And Jay, she also predicted more solar flares.
Yeah.
My gosh. How could she have possibly known that?
So she said grave danger around Lindsay Lohan. And all I could think of is Lindsay Lohan stumbling through a graveyard, like she stumbles into an open hole or something. and then Miley Cyrus, full body cast. It's like, well, she does ride wrecking balls, so I could see that. That one I'm
sure.
But maybe not in 2014. We'll have to wait till next year. She had, to continue with what Evan was saying, like talk about like scattershot here, like her wild weather predictions, like pretty much anywhere there was wild weather, she predicted more wild weather. She predicted earthquakes in Japan, which statistically, like, that's going to happen. Japan gets a ton of earthquakes.
Before we go on to give our own predictions for 2015 and see how we did last year, let's go through the big news items for 2014 that the psychics didn't predict.
For me, guys, it was what leaps to mind immediately is Ebola. Not one person. Such a huge news item. Clearly, I think one of the biggest news stories of the year. Nobody even came close. I mean, how do you miss that?
Well, there's this thing called the Akashic File, Bob, and they just opened the wrong drawer. They meant to open the top one, not the bottom one.
Must be.
Anyone could have made that mistake.
2014 is officially the hottest year on record.
Really?
Yep.
So and I nobody guess, predicted that? I mean, I would think that would be a safe prediction for a lot
does that mean we're not going to hear anymore that there hasn't been any global warming for 16 years?
That's right. That'll shut them up.
Well, there was a really good mix of things in 2014. You know, we had an airline disaster. What was it? The Malaysian Airlines?
The Malaysian Airlines. Well, they lost a plane. Several. And then they had one shot down.
Yeah. And they're right. The plane shot down. That's right.
Russia annexed Crimea. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
There was while we were in Australia, there was a rare cricket death. Philip Hughes.
Oh, yeah.
Philip Hughes.
That was terrible.
Died in the game.
Yeah. Well, no, he died 2 days later.
Yeah, you're right. He got hit. He got hit
like in
the base of his skull and died as a result. Which is so rare.
How about the formation of ISIS, guys?
The rise of ISIS.
Rise of ISIS.
The Israeli-Hamas conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Williams' suicide.
Yeah,
Robin Williams. Now, hang on. We got to put a little asterisk by that one. Psychic Nikki did predict Robin Williams would pass away. However, she went ahead and listed about 400 celebrities, and Robin Williams happened to be one of the names on
literally,
the list.
Literally 400?
Yes. It's probably closer to 200, but it was in the hundreds. It's such a ridiculous thing. Someone made the list and only did a highlight of the text of Robin Williams' name as juxtaposed to everybody else's name who didn't die, all these celebrities.
So like she's doing it at different times on the sly so that she could then go back and just pick out the one that was correct at the end.
Of course. That's all you need is one hit, right?
Yeah.
That's all she needs to keep her people happy.
All right, how about the fact that we landed on a comet?
Yeah.
Yeah, although, well, you know, they should have known that. They should have known that.
That was predictable.
You're right. You're right. That was
all right. How about losing? How about losing communication with the probe after it landed on the comet? Nobody thought that.
The tilting and the footing wasn't quite right.
The fatal use of force by police officers in the U.S. becoming such a huge issue, like Ferguson.
Yeah.
The Sony hack becoming an international incident.
Yeah.
Normalizing relations between the U.S. and Cuba.
To me, this is the most compelling thing about psychic predictions.
Some international stuff: Boko Haram abduction of the schoolgirls. There was a coup in Thailand, the Umbrella Revolution in Hong Kong, and the South Korean ferry capsizing, killing 307 people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these would be sending psychic vibrations so far and wide that any Jedi would get verklempt. We'd have to sit down.
Verklempt Jedi, nice.
The Ice Bucket Challenge was pretty big in 2014. Yeah. Had a big social impact, no predictions
viral
there.
Media. Yeah.
And the price of oil plummeted, went from about $107 a barrel down to $50 a barrel.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good one.
Huge. From June to December, it plummeted.
Wow.
Didn't see that coming.
So I think we covered it.
That's a big psychic fail for 2014, as it is every year. But let's see how we did last year. Jay, why don't you start? You made a few interesting predictions.
I made three predictions. I said the FAA will approve drones to carry lightweight payloads, and I don't think that happened.
No.
I said that Amazon.com will become the biggest collector of personal info, and I'm not sure if that happened.
Okay.
I couldn't validate that either way. So I could be right on that one,
Evan.
So don't – yeah, just settle down. And then I said more lightning and volcano images on Reddit, and I was correct on that.
That was a solid hit.
Yeah.
It was a solid hit.
It was a palpable hit.
Now, I found out something interesting. There is some type of thing with a volcano and lightning. There is a connection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the dust that it spews into the atmosphere creates a disparity in the electrical charges causing lightning strikes.
I saw a lot. I did, but I'm a huge fan of Reddit. So it is anecdotal, but I did see them, and, you know, according to my own personal research, I was correct. Okay, so my three predictions for next year. Flooding will start to happen more from global warming. We're going to start to hear, like, you know, this and that, this city, this area is flooded, and it's simply the sea levels rising.
Okay.
SpaceX will prove that the Dragon V2 is indeed reusable. And and continuing with my infatuation.
Maybe a couple years early, but go ahead.
I'm talking.
Yeah.
Continuing with my infatuation with drones will take a huge leap forward. You're going to see – you think you see drones a lot now and hear about them a lot now. You're going to hear about them a lot more.
It'll be the year of the drones?
Yes.
Okay.
Sounds like a Terminator movie.
Evan, go ahead.
Last year I made three predictions. My first prediction was that the first rogue moon would be discovered orbiting a rogue planet.
Yeah, that didn't happen.
Yeah. No,
now, if you said exomoon, you would have been there. You would have been good.
I know. I should have. Well, maybe something in my – that part of my brain that harnesses psychic energy. What part of the brain is that called, Steve?
The connectigazoid.
Thank you. There's always technical terms for these things. Yes. If I had only fine-tuned that a little bit better, I could have gotten exomoon instead of moon orbiting rogue moon. So that's a miss. Now, next one, a breakthrough in thorium. Reactors. And, well, I'll take this one as a hit because February 2014, the world's first thorium reactor has been designed in India.
Okay. All right.
Designed. Yes. And they're going to be building it and they hope to have the prototype in operation by 2016.
Wow.
I'm going to take that as a hit. My last one was that flying cars or a flying car would be readily available to purchase on the market. You can walk away or fly away with a car right out of the showroom. No, unfortunately.
No.
They're close. Man, are they close. They're so close. There's a couple of really, really close contenders here. There's the Aeromobile.
They're really all just drivable planes. They're not really flying cars, in my opinion.
Well, I think you're right, Steve. You do need a pilot's license to operate these things.
Yeah, if you need a pilot's license, it's a plane.
But isn't that going to be the case with any human flying apparatus for the most
not
part.
Necessarily.
At least that has an engine, I should say. I mean, you know, you can take a glider up and fly around in that.
I mean, it's ambiguous. I'll give you that.
So maybe 2015 will be the year in which we start seeing the planes in the sky, but I mean, the cars in the sky, but who knows? Who knows? All right. Would you like my brand new hot off the presses predictions? Here we go.
Please.
Three more. No. 2015. The internet will break.
another Kardashian.
No. Here we go.
Get out of here.
Here's a specific. The 1 second rule in June will go very badly. So this is the year in which in June we have to make up for a lost second. And there's talk that the
leap
internet
second?
Is a leap second or
so what's the so this is the equivalent of the Y2K, but it's like a
sort of the there'll be an extra second counted on June 30th, 2015 at 11:59:60, which you know is when it turns over. The clocks will stand still for one full second to make up for the added time.
Yeah.
The day will thus have 86,401 seconds instead of the usual 86,400 seconds. And the internet may have significant problems with this. Now, they're trying to compensate for it now by introducing very small fractions of seconds added to the clocks now for each of the 180 whatever days leading up to the middle of the year, in which hopefully they're kind of hoping that things will go okay, that it'll sort of it'll seem seamless to computers. But I have a prediction that it'll go very badly. Hence, the internet will break. That's my prediction number one. Number two, a new island will rise from the oceans, most likely from severe earthquake activity. We're going to get a new island of some sort somewhere on the planet.
Yeah.
And my third prediction, Star Wars Episode 7. Will earn in its first 5 days, first for the opening weekend, long weekend, $350 million bank
in five days.
And that will
international.
Totally. Yes. That will totally eclipse the current champion, which is, I believe it was the Avengers, Marvel, the Avengers, which was $207 million
as of today.
No, good prediction. I like it.
More than a 50% increase.
I know. I think it's going to be a order of magnitude larger. Well, technically not, but significantly larger. There you have it. Three predictions. Very specific.
Quite
None
bold.
Of this crap
it was
about
a very specific and very bold.
It's going to be cold in the northern hemisphere. Give me a break. Freaking
All right, Bob, go ahead.
Okay, last year, my first prediction was that the ultra-high-def TVs will continue to proliferate despite the fact that there's nothing really to watch on it. So, yeah, that's that was a joke one, and sure, they're continuing to proliferate. And there actually is solid plans to get some serious content. It's kind of silly to buy one at this time, but that will change unless the 8K TVs eclipse it and make them obsolete before they really even hit mainstream. Let's see. Second prediction was that Siri would become sentient and destroy all non-iPhone iOSs. That did not happen, but I am still waiting for that to happen. And my third prediction was that computer-controlled car would have an accident, creating lawsuits that would hinder the adoption of computer-controlled cars. And that didn't really happen either. We've certainly made advances with computer-controlled cars, but there are none that you could buy at this time. And the first ones that you can buy, you can't lounge in the back seat or take a nap. You will need to be kind of ready to take over just in case. And then the next generation after that, more likely would then be able to completely take over control without any issues. So predictions for 2015, I predict that there will be developed a nanotechnology drug delivery breakthrough that will just flat out cure a major disease.
I hope so, Bob.
Just bam, done. The second prediction is that a record-breaking Kuiper Belt object bigger than Pluto will be discovered. And my last one is that a supernova will be discovered within the Milky Way within 10,000 light years, which would be awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, I hope
that one's right. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Well, that, we want there. That gamma ray burst to kind of go a different direction.
There's nothing aimed at us. You don't have to worry.
Oh, that's good. Thank goodness.
All right. My predictions last year, I went on a limb, as I usually do. So I predicted there would be a major Bitcoin theft, and that one absolutely came true.
Mm.
That was true. There were several, actually. But even as early as March, a company went bankrupt. $620,000 worth of Bitcoin were stolen from the startup Fluxcoin.
Yikes.
I predicted a major breakthrough in fusion technology. That was like a really serious prediction. And that one came true. I'm absolutely taking credit for this. Yeah. In February, for the first time, scientists generated more energy from fusion reactions than they put into the nuclear fuel. A crucial step on the road to harnessing fusion power.
And a crucial qualification that you just added there.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it didn't really generate more energy than the whole process took, but then was put into the nuclear fuel.
Yes.
Still, I didn't say that we were going to have, fusion technologies, that there would be a major breakthrough, and there was. I also predicted, this is my perennial prediction, there would be more exoplanets discovered, and there were.
And there will be again, most likely.
I do that every year. Okay, so my predictions for 2015, major breakthrough in medicine. All right, I'll get a little bit more specific.
Thank you.
In HIV. I think there's going to be a major breakthrough in the treatment of HIV.
Yes.
Maybe even a vaccine. We'll see.
I agree.
Mm.
On the political spectrum, I predict that North Korea will make vague threats against the U.S., who will do nothing in response.
Might as well put that in the yes column right now.
And not only will there be more exoplanets discovered, but many of them will be in the Goldilocks zone.
Oh, that's funny you should say that because.
Yeah, I know.
Yep. Okay.
Because of recent news events.
Yeah. Right. So more of what is already happening will occur.
Yes. I love
Okay. Those. That's not the longest limb you've ever been out on, but it's a limb, I suppose.
I'm just playing the game. Just playing the game.
I hope you're having fun, Steve.
Yeah. Well, the whole point of that is to show how easy it is to do better than the professional psychics.
Yeah, right?
Well, before we go on to our news items, it's time to open registration for Nexus 2015. So this is the Northeast Conference on Science and Skepticism in New York City, April 9th through 12th. And we're expanding this year to a full 3-day conference. So Friday is going to be a science-based medicine conference. Then we'll have full days of general science and skepticism on Saturday and Sunday.
Great.
We have, a great lineup in addition to all the science-based medicine guys. We have John Rennie is coming. I always love John Rennie.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Love him.
This year also, so we've been doing like a special show on Friday night. And this year, guys, the show on Friday night is us. Our skeptical extravaganza.
Yeah.
So we created the extravaganza in 2014 and we ran it over our trip to Australia and New Zealand. So we actually did it in California first and then we did it for each of the other two conferences. And we had an amazing time. Like we love it and it's a hell of a lot of fun. We really think you'll enjoy it. So don't miss out. That's on Friday night.
So describe it, Jay. What the hell is it?
Well, Bob, it is a collection of a lot of different bits that all revolve around science and skepticism mixed in with us just laughing and having fun and everything. But there's like, it has so many different elements, right? It has geek culture mixed in. There's music mixed in. There's some actual, a stage performance bit all by itself. Like we have like a little thing
a quiz show.
Yeah. Then we have the quiz show and then we have Skeptical Pictionary. We have rogues going at each other on instant debates where we don't know what the debate is going to be.
And the whole thing is hosted by George Robb, who also throws in a song or two.
I liken it to modern vaudeville with certainly a skeptical and scientific slant to it.
Skeptical would vaudeville,
With less slapstick, though.
Less slapstick.
It's actually a lot better than it sounds.
It's not vaudeville, no.
It's a classic.
You know the TV show Laughing?
Yes.
It's a skeptical version of that.
Lot of audience participation.
You know that TV show, The $6 Million Man? It's nothing like that.
Do you know when Gallagher hits the watermelons with the hammer?
Yeah, we don't do that.
So, yeah, we don't do that either.
It's a ton of fun. So go to nexus.org.
That is NECSS.org.
Thank you, Jay. Go to the registration page and register for the conference. And we hope to see a lot of our listeners there. If you are a member, any kind of member of the SGU, then I will be sending you a special secret registration code that will get you a 10% discount.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Pretty epic. All right. Yep. So, guys, I'll see you at Nexus, all right?
All right. Yeah.
You got it.
You might have some stuff before then, but yeah, we'll see you then.
One or two things.
All right. Evan, you are going – this is an interesting item, although nothing super new here. An article in the Wall Street Journal claiming that science has proved God.
The headline does read, "Science increasingly makes the case for God." That the odds of life existing on another planet grow ever longer. So intelligent design, is that what that means? And this is brought to us by a gentleman named Eric Metaxas. What he is saying is that essentially the more we realize just how improbable it is that we human beings came to exist and become aware of our existence and the universe, the conditions in which the universe had to be under for that to arise, for us to arise to that level, are so improbable. So improbable. I mean, we're talking an octillion to one, which is a one followed by 27 zeros, that could have ever happened in the history of whatever kind of history you want to measure. Therefore, it didn't happen because the odds are so much against it. And therefore, insert your favorite creator there, a god or gods or what have you. Which, like you said, Steve, is not a new idea
It's the anthropic revolution.
It is the anthropic principle. And it's been making this particular story, not just because it was in the Wall Street Journal, but I've seen it in lots of different places. It's being passed around. Facebook and Twitter feeds are carrying it, and it is getting some traction, especially with the holidays having just passed. And it got a lot of conversation stirring. In fact, there's 6,000 comments practically on this alone at the Wall Street Journal.
Well, he's making a lot of shit up, too. So he goes on saying that Carl Sagan believed that life would be throughout the universe. And then since then, we discovered more and more parameters necessary for a planet to support life. And he writes, "Today there are more than 200 known parameters necessary for a planet to support life." What the hell is he talking about?
Where's that?
Yeah, he gives no reference, gives no even, you know, vague mention of where he's getting that from, as if this is some kind of accepted scientific principle. I don't know what the hell he's talking about. You know, what kind of life is he assuming? Human life, intelligent life? You know, biology like it exists on Earth. And what 200 known parameters, you know?
Right. Where's the microbial life? Where's the extremophile life? Where, you know, how does that figure into any of his equations? It doesn't. At least it doesn't appear to. Not that he's elaborated on it all in this article. And the whole thing about, yes, you need all these things in the universe for us to become existent and aware of our existence. Okay. I'll give him that to a degree, but someone else made sort of a point in that. And then you attribute, it's a miracle, right? Oh my gosh. So what were the odds as they like to say?
To clarify, he's making two separate anthropic principle arguments. One is that the universe itself has all of the parameters necessary for complex molecules and life to exist, which, yeah, we've talked about that before. And the second is that the planet Earth is highly improbable just because it's in the right location, distance from the right kind of a star, and it has, mm-hmm. you know, gas giants in the outer solar system to protect it from
Jupiter
asteroids.
Ate up all the stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't bombard us as bad as it would
have. Those are the only ones he mentions. There's apparently 198 other ones. I don't know, you know, what the hell he's talking about. But, so that's two separate arguments he's making. The one about the Earth, I think, is just made up nonsense. I just don't know where he's getting that. If anything, it's more likely that there is life in the universe from what we know now from 20 or 30 years ago. We're discovering, as we mentioned on the show all the time, lots and lots of Earth-like planets. We're discovering more and more extremophiles. Where scientists are talking more and more about that we have to broaden our concept of the physical conditions that would allow life to occur. If anything, it's more likely. And that about the universe, the universe anthropic principle, that's just, you know, it's hard to even know what to say about that. We don't know why our universe has the physical laws that it has. But I think, you know, Lawrence Krauss responded to this guy and he got it right. He's saying it's far more likely that life is fine-tuned to the universe rather than the universe being fine-tuned to life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, we exist here because we can exist. Because, you know, we obviously anything that exists in a universe is going to be compatible with the physical laws of that universe.
I thought a good analogy was put forth by John Allen Paulos. And I got this from the Skeptics Dictionary. If you're thinking about, you know, large numbers and probability and so forth.
Enumeracy,
right, and we're actually very bad at human beings are innately at probability. But think of it like this, and this is what he says. Rarity by itself shouldn't necessarily be evidence of anything. When one is dealt a bridge hand of 13 cards, the probability of being dealt that particular hand is less than 1 in 600 billion.
Whoa.
Still, it would be absurd for someone to be dealt a hand, examine it carefully, calculate the probability of getting it is less than 1 in 600 billion, and then conclude that he must not have been dealt that very hand because it's so very improbable.
Right.
Exactly correct. That's the correct way to look at that.
That's the lottery fallacy.
The lottery fallacy, which you've blogged about before, Steve, and we've talked about before.
So this is just more sloppy thinking, just trying to come up with some kind of argument to say science proves God, which is just a flawed approach to begin with. Bob, we've been spending a lot of time talking about 2014, looking back, but you're going to give us a news item looking forward, trying to predict what this is, like a serious look at the likely scientific breakthroughs of 2015.
Yeah, Steve, I've been thinking about our annual wrap-up show last time, and we love talking about the best and most interesting science news of the previous year. And I thought it'd be kind of cool to talk about, you know, what we may be talking about in the coming months on the show, and perhaps even stories that we'll be talking about on the 2015 wrap-up show in 12 months.
Yeah.
For me, the most anticipated science news for the year coming up is the long-awaited reboot of the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider in Geneva, Switzerland. It hasn't been operational for 20 months now, which has been very frustrating and a little bit sad, but it will be coming back online this year. And it will be at its very close to its design maximum power output of 14 trillion electron volts, which is about seven teravolts for each of the proton beams. It's got two proton beams that smash into each other, and that's twice as powerful as it has been at any other time. So that's a major upgrade, just a fantastic advance that I just can't wait to see. These really tiny beams of protons are each one is going to have as much energy as a speeding freight train. So these are just these behemoths that just fly into each other at relativistic speeds. And what's going to happen? We don't really know. There's some really interesting possibilities. We could possibly find particles that are associated with dark matter and dark energy, which would be fantastic. We could also potentially find evidence of higher spatial dimensions, which would be, to me, one of the just amazing discoveries of the century or the millennia. It's just really incredible to even think that that's even possible. It's going to be a lot of news for the LHC in the coming year, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. The other thing to look forward to is Pluto. It will almost certainly be all over the news for much of the year. NASA's New Horizon craft left the Earth years ago in 2006, and it's funny, when it left, Pluto was a planet, and now that it's set to arrive, it's not even a planet anymore. But the New Horizon craft is fascinating in and of itself. It's the fastest craft ever to leave the Earth, going about 50,000 miles per hour. No, sorry, wow. 50,000 kilometers per hour, which is 31,000 miles per hour, which is still very, very fast. And in fact, it's going to start taking measurements January 15th. So very soon we're going to start, you know, seeing the initial flood of data that's going to be coming in from this guy.
Oh, I can't wait.
And
with
the new moons that were recently discovered just last year, Steve, or a year prior?
A couple years ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I wonder if Horizons will pick up any other objects.
I should have predicted that. I think it's a good, very good bet that we'll find at least one smaller one. And then finally, the other big thing I'm looking for, if you remember last year, the Bicep 2 collaboration revealed that they had evidence of cosmic inflation and gravity waves. And, huge, huge discovery, which was just so fascinating to read about and learn about. Of course, there was a big downer, a couple months later when, another research group showed that there were some fatal flaws in their, in their methods. So that was a bit of a bummer, but the good news is that the findings of Bicep 2 are not completely invalidated. They still can potentially be true. So they're actually going to release some new information this month. So there might be some interesting news in there. And also they're working on Bicep 3, which is the next generation of this type of collaboration.
The revenge of Bicep.
Yeah, the revenge of Bicep 2. Bicep 3.
This time it's personal.
And hopefully before the end of the year, we'll have, some validation, of the fact that they actually did prove, to a significant degree, cosmic inflation and the existence of gravity waves. So that would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, I think the most, interesting things are the things we don't even know to talk about. You know what I mean?
Yep.
We can't even predict. Like, what's going to totally hit us out of left field? All right. Well, Jay, you're taking over the middle of the episode puzzle segment, which will contain Who's That Noisy, but maybe some other types of things as well. But you're going to start off this week with a Who's That Noisy.
I have a Who's That Noisy.
Your inaugural noisy.
I don't have Evan's awesome rap. Evan had the whole thing.
You'll make it your own, Jake.
And now.
I'll give you a few pointers. This is exciting for me because for the first time I get to play instead of always knowing what's behind the curtain. I get to see.
Yeah, it gets old fast. Don't worry.
Nice, Bob. Very nice.
So I think I'm going to start with the first few noisies will be themed, and I'll tell you what the theme is after I play the next three noisies. So it'll be at least 3 weeks. That's right. So. For my first noisy, take a listen. So there you have it, boys.
All right, that's a good one to start out with, Jay. I think I have an idea what your theme is, but we'll see.
You never know, Steve.
You never know.
Very cool.
You can email your guesses in to WTN@theskepticsguide.org.
Well, we have a really interesting interview with Tim Farley about cybersecurity. So let's go to that interview now. Joining us now is Tim Farley. Tim, welcome back to The Skeptic's Guide.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, Tim.
Tim is the creator of a website we talk about all the time on the show, actually, whattstheharm.net, and a blogger at skeptools.com.
That's right.
And your Wikipedia page also says you were instrumental in the apprehension of spammer David Mabus.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got many an email from him, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's supposed to be in court next month, hopefully for the final time. Mm-hmm. Cross your fingers.
So this is a guy who just likes to harass skeptics and atheists online.
Yeah.
Crops up every now and then. And
yeah, he kind of started with James Randi and was fixated on him and then sort of spread out to everyone else who was in any way associated with James Randi, however mm-hmm. peripherally.
Right, exactly. So, Tim, we decided to have you on the show this week because you are also an expert in cybersecurity.
That's right. I do web application security for a major software company who I can't mention the name of, but but I've also worked for a number of other software companies here in Atlanta that do computer security tools, and there are actually 3 U.S. patents with my name on them that have to do with computer security.
Awesome.
Can you give us just a start with a bird's eye view of what the current situation is for your average computer user in terms of what the risks are out there in terms of malware and viruses and things like that?
Yeah. Malware is, it's not so much the classic computer viruses. In the early days of MS-DOS and Windows, there were these computer viruses that you would get that would replicate on your disk and sometimes take up all your disk space. Now it's more toward what we call malware, which doesn't really often work like a virus per se, but is basically just a piece of software to do the bidding of a criminal. And they'll use any means necessary to get that software onto your computer. And typically these days, that means either emailing you some sort of an attachment or a link, or what's called a drive-by, putting it somewhere on the web and enticing you to click on it or to visit that website, and then the website uses some trick to get it to download onto your computer. And then once somebody's put a piece of software onto your computer, you know, all bets are off at that point. They can do anything that they could do if they were sitting at your computer, potentially. So they use your computer to do their bidding for them, to send spam or to hack other computers or simply steal information from you, such as your passwords or your credit card numbers or whatever they can dig out of your files on your computer.
Yeah, that sounds pretty scary. They do identity theft. Is done that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Identity theft, and there are whole, you know, on the dark net and in other places on the net, there are places where people just are constantly trading credit card numbers, and you can literally go to one of these IRC channels and pay somebody X amount of dollars for X number of stolen credit card numbers of dubious origin. And these days, there have been some, you know, high-profile hacks of places like Target and Home Depot, and in those cases, it's been credit card numbers they've been after,
yeah,
and stolen them in huge amounts. And it's the same sort of thing. In the case of Target, in particular, it was a similar sort of attack, but they injected the malware into the computer that you swipe your credit card on, or the computer that handles the information from the credit card swipe.
So you're saying that they put something on top of that to get your data, right?
Yeah, they inject a piece of software into the computer that's collecting the card swipes, and then they collect the card swipes and ship them off somewhere else while your credit card transaction is going on.
Now, Tim, how did Target not know that a piece of software got installed on their computer system?
Yeah, interestingly enough, Target had a piece of equipment known as a FireEye, which I have some familiar with because we have one where I work, and it's a really interesting piece of equipment in that what it does is it will take every piece of email or download that comes into your network and literally put it into a virtual machine and do the virtual equivalent of clicking on it. And then watch what happens. And then it'll send you a report. And we get reports, you know, regularly across my email saying, oh, so-and-so on the third floor clicked on this link and you need to go clean their computer up. And it turns out in the cleanup of Target, they found out that they had gotten a report from their FireEye that a piece of malware was detected, but they had not properly responded to that report. If they had, they might have stopped the infection as it was coming in.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So give us a quick overview of what an average user should do for basic, you know, security hygiene.
Yeah, the most important thing is to be suspicious and be skeptical of unsolicited either websites or attachments or anything people are trying to get you to look at. So any sort of attachment in your email, any sort of link someone wants you to click on, either whether it be through Facebook or through email or any other way that people send you stuff, you have to be suspicious, especially if it comes from a website that is not familiar to you. One of the things to be aware of is that it's very easy to spoof the origin of an email. So what these folks will do sometimes is they will send an email that appears to be from a friend of yours, possibly someone who had gotten hacked earlier, possibly someone's name just appeared in a list of emails somewhere and they happened to guess right that you were a friend of theirs. So it might appear to come from a friend of yours, but you have to be aware of how your friends write and how your friends, whether your friend would send you something about like that. And when you click on a link in many email clients and in browsers, there's a way to hover your mouse cursor over the link and look at where the link actually goes to.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be careful about links that go to a different URL than what is shown on the screen.
Sure.
Don't click anything. This is my basic policy, unless I know exactly what it is. Although right. I have to say, every now and then I almost get taken in.
Mm.
But you know, then that filter clicks in. Like the one time they almost got me, I got a receipt apparently from iTunes.
Yeah.
And it was for like some music and a movie, and it was like $100. So I have two daughters who have access to iTunes. So my immediate reaction was, crap, one of my daughters downloaded $100 worth of stuff without clearing it with me. And so I almost clicked on it. Like, wait a minute. Wait, this is not legitimate. And then I realized it was the whole thing was a scam. It was perfectly designed just to get you to react, you know, and click that link.
That is a very, very common technique these days. Fake receipts for any sort of large purchase that you would be angry that you had done accidentally or incorrectly. Delivery receipts for packages that weren't delivered that need to be delivered. We see those all the time. And if they manage to guess right with something like iTunes, which is probably a pretty good guess, they can often get you to click. And the thing about those things is that if you legitimately have an account with whatever the email claims to be, you can almost always go to the website. You know, don't click the link. Just go to iTunes, you know, directly using the conventional way that you would do that. Go in your web browser and type Amazon.com or UnitedAirlines.com or whatever it claims to be, and directly navigate there without clicking and look in your account. And if there really was something to tell you, it would be visible in your account on that website.
Right.
Yeah, for me, a big red flag is when they say, dear madam or sir. If they're not using my name, then all right, that's an instant red flag right
or
there.
Or dear email name. You know, not your name.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about that is that there are instances where stuff will get targeted. What we're talking about is generally referred to as phishing, P-H-I-S-H. And they'll send millions of those generically targeted. But if somebody has some reason to try to target you directly or your organization or the company you work for,
they'll have my name,
Sometimes they'll have your name. Sometimes they'll have a lot more information about you, and they'll target things quite specifically. And we had for a while at my company, there were some hackers who wanted to get into the system that we run, and they were targeting the employees of our company very specifically, and had they had managed to figure out the names of some of our key employees, so they had the first name right and things like that. And so these things will often be amazingly well targeted if the attacker is clever.
Tim, I'm curious, what antivirus or anti-malware software do you have on your computer?
My personal computer that I use at home is a Mac, so I don't use one currently on it. I always have a firewall on there, and then I have a Windows computer that I use at work, and it's the whatever the company, you know, standard software for that. So that's what I use, and then we have a number of sophisticated tools at work that we use. The other piece of advice I can give people, the biggest piece of advice I can give you, is a big trend these days with attacking websites is if they can get the password file to the website, they will publish it many times just to embarrass the website into changing their security policy and things like that. And that's happened a number of times in recent years. I think Adobe.com at one point had their password list, user list and password list published. So a big piece of advice I can give anyone is don't use the same password everywhere.
Right.
Because what'll happen is, even if the sites that you trust, like your bank and Amazon.com and your credit card company or whoever it is you do business with, even if you trust them not to get hacked, it's the little tiny blog or that weird little company that you bought a pair of socks from that will get hacked. And if you happen to use the same password there that you use everywhere else, then that's just as bad. And someone will, you know, try it out. They literally will use scripts, and once they get a list of those passwords, they'll point it at a major site and just try every password they found, and they might hit yours.
It is a pain in the ass, but that what you just said is such an amazingly effective way of at least stopping the spread of being hacked.
Yeah, it is a pain. A few years ago when I think it was Gawker or one of those major sites got hacked, and I got an email from them that my, you know, blog comment password was exposed in that hack. I went through and changed my passwords on every site I was on, and it was like, oh my God, I did not realize I had this many passwords out in the world, and just chasing them all down and changing them all. It took months really to find them all.
Part of the problem, though, I think, is like I remember at work, I was at a meeting with our software guys, and they were saying, here's the password policy for Yale, right? And the password policy was have a different hard password for every single thing that you access, change it every month, and don't write it down anywhere. It's like, right. What am I, freaking data? I mean, there's no way you're going to remember a hard password that, you know, and change it every month and have it be different for the 30 passwords I have, you know, just.
And
so,
don't write it down? That doesn't make sense.
And don't write it down. So they made the bar so high that I think people just ignore it and have like the password under their keyboard or whatever. Right. You know, taped to their monitor.
Yeah.
Rather than, how about some reasonable guidelines that a real human being can follow? Yeah. So, you know what I mean? Like that are good enough, let alone this ridiculously perfect, that, you know, password policy that no one's ever going to comply with.
Yeah. What I usually find is there's one or two key passwords that you're always going to have to type, like logging into your computer, unlocking your phone. If you use iCloud in the iTunes store, then the iTunes password typically comes in a pop-up prompt that you can't interrupt. But beyond that, most other passwords, like website passwords and things like that, you can put into a password manager. So those handful of passwords that you have to type have to be something that you can remember and you can type. And literally, I could not tell you, other than those three passwords, I could not tell you what most of my other passwords are.
Yeah, me too.
They're all in the password manager, and most of them are like 25 characters long, 30 characters long.
Whoa.
And I just I just hit a button to shoot them into the login prompt, and I don't have to remember them.
All right, well, Tim, thanks for scaring the crap out of us.
Yeah, way to kick off the year.
It's my pleasure.
Because that's what you do for a living, right? If you're in the job of security, you're in the job of scaring people.
That's right.
All right, well, Tim, you have a great year.
Okay, you too.
Thanks, Tim.
Take care, Tim.
It's time for Science or Fiction.
Each week, I come up with three science news items or facts, two genuine and one fictitious. I challenge my panel of skeptics to tell me which one they think is the fake. We're going to start the year out with just three regular news items.
And a clean slate.
You guys ready?
Zeros across the board. I love it. Yes.
Okay, here we go. Item number one. A new study finds that Americans purchase more food in the period following the holidays, January through March, than during the holiday season, Thanksgiving through New Year. Number two, a recent review finds that about 60% of skin infections presenting to medical care are caused by spider bites. And number three, researchers find that an existing drug increases the activity of brown fat, increasing resting metabolic rate by over 200 calories per day.
Holy shit.
What the hell?
All right,
every one of those is awesome.
Bob, you get to go first.
Oh, wonderful. I knew I should have kept quiet.
Yeah, you spoke up first. You said, pick me, pick me.
Yeah, that's all Steve heard.
Oh, God, what the heck? Where's a coin? I just got to get a coin. More just food following New Year's than before. My first thought is, well, it's colder. You're indoors much more. So, yeah, you're going to be eating. But then I'm thinking, it's the holidays. You're buying food like crazy. But then I'm thinking that you often go out to family or friends, and you're not necessarily purchasing all that food yourself. So I don't know what to think about that. Wow. Let's see. 60% of skin infections caused by spider bites. 60% skin infections. Oh, God. No, I mean, that seems way too high. Spider bites? I don't think I've ever been bitten by a spider in my life, and I love spiders.
Sure you have.
They clearly don't love you, Bob.
Not that I'm aware of. And then this last one, increasing brown fat, brown adipose tissue, that would be incredible. 200 calories a day, just sitting on your butt. I mean, that's a couple peanut butter cups extra every day with no loss. All right, I'm going to go with the spider fiction.
Okay, Jay.
All right, so this first one about the Americans are purchasing more food after the holidays. That's kind of strange, isn't it? Like, okay, they're purchasing more food. Like, I guess we're saying that in essence they're eating more, right? After the holidays. God, that's, I don't know. Well, if we go to Evan's New Year's resolution, that they shouldn't be doing that then, should they, Evan?
That's correct. Exactly right. Oh, I don't know. Resolution?
This makes me think, okay, you know what? People eat more in the winter. That makes sense. Recent review finds this one about the 60% of the skin infections. That's a lot of the skin infections coming from one little insect. That's interesting.
Arachnid. Spiders are not insects. Yeah, they're
close enough. Turtles aren't mammals. Get out of here. and then this third one here, researchers find that there's a drug that exists that increases the activity of brown fat. Bob, that would kind of scare me. Imagine, like, I mean, that's increasing your metabolism for real. Like, this is, if this is true, they're saying that this drug increases your metabolism. Doesn't that also increase your heart rate? All right, just to not pick the one that Bob did, though, I'm going to say the brown fat one is the fake, Steve.
Okay, Evan?
As I read through this one about the food purchasing, we have two very distinct dates here. It's Thanksgiving through New Year. That's roughly 40 days. January through March is 90 days.
No, so it's average. It's like by day, Evan. It's not because it's a bigger period of time.
Good try. Oh, good try.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Oh! Yeah, it's like calories per day, you know.
I have to consider that one as possibly being the fiction, whereas I was not going to before. The 60% of skin infections presenting to medical care are caused by spider bites. Wow, it seems very high. I don't know if the presenting to medical care part of it has anything to do with that. I mean, like skin infections that go undiagnosed, is that what we're talking about in the other side of this coin? So maybe that one's a fiction. The last one about brown fat. The drug increases the activity of brown fat. Yeah, I think that one's going to – I think that's right. I mean, sure, you could – I mean, I think Jay's point about side effects and stuff might be a valid one. But sure, you could have a drug that's doing that. Doesn't mean that it's hitting the market anytime soon until they, you know, get it right or figure out something else about it. So I think it's between the food and the spiders. I'll say that – I'll put my coin down and I will go with the food one. More Americans purchase food.
All right, great. So we're starting the year with an even split. Even split. That's pretty good.
And therefore?
So let's take them in order.
Reverse order.
A new study finds that Americans purchase more food in the period following the holidays than during the holiday season. Evan thinks this one is the fiction. Jay and Bob thinks this one is science. And this one is science.
Evan, does that have to do with available cash?
I don't know. The researchers don't know either. These are researchers from the Cornell University Food and Brand Lab. They just looked at purchases and they found that they considered July to November to be the baseline. And then compared to that, during the holiday season, they increased their food purchases by 15%. And only about 25% of the additional food is healthy. So 75% of the additional food is basically pie and all that great stuff that we like to eat over the holidays.
Ugh.
Surprisingly, in the period January to March following the holidays, the assumption was that your food purchases would revert back to normal. But people actually increased their food purchases further by an additional 9% during the post-holiday season. Although they did add mostly healthy food, like vegetables, but they continued their junk food purchases following the holidays.
Ooh.
Which is interesting.
Hmm.
So they continued to buy the cookies and pies and ice cream and all that stuff, but also threw in some vegetables.
Well, so much for the New Year's resolutions of losing weight and stuff. I guess that kind of goes out the window.
Yeah, that's kind of what they concluded. Although I had the same reaction that Bob and Jay did. I was thinking, yeah, maybe people just need to consume more calories in the winter because it's freaking cold. And that, you know, when it's cold out, you burn more calories. You know, your caloric requirements are increased. They didn't even discuss that in the article. So I don't, and again, this did not look at the reasons for the increase in purchase, just what people were purchasing. Let's go on to number two. A recent review finds that about 60% of skin infections presenting to medical care are caused by spider bites. Bob, you think this one is the fiction. Jay and Evan think this one is science. And this one is the
Say
fiction.
It. Yeah, baby!
Bastard.
That was my second choice.
What the researchers did, this was Vetter, Swanson, Weinstein, and White. What they did was they reviewed the literature on skin infections and spider bites, and they found there's almost no evidence that anyone gets a skin infection from a spider bite. They couldn't find any real documentation that spiders are a vector of bacterial infections at all. Which is, and the reason they specifically looked at this issue is because oftentimes spiders are blamed for otherwise unexplainable skin infections. It's like, oh, you got a little, you know, infection going on in the skin there. Maybe you got bit by a spider. So they said, really? Is that really true? And they basically found no evidence that there's any reason to blame spiders for otherwise unexplained skin infections. They do not appear to be a vector. I think they said there was a single case in the literature of a person getting a bacterial skin infection through a spider bite. And it was an unusual bacteria, not one that normally results in a skin infection, that almost certainly came from the spider. Otherwise, there's just no evidence for it. So it's a rare event. So good work, Bob. And then let's go on. Number three, researchers find that an existing drug increases the activity of brown fat, increasing resting metabolic rate over 200 calories per day. Jay, you thought this one was the fiction, but this one is very interesting science. The drug they used was mirabegron, and it's a beta-3 adrenergic receptor agonist. It's already used to treat, and it's an FDA-approved drug used for overactive bladder. So it's already on the market, but not for this. What they found was that if they gave subjects 200 milligrams a day, which is like four times the approved dose for use in the bladder, that it increased in 12 healthy male subjects. This is like a pilot study, but you know, not a massive study. But it showed that they increased their resting metabolic rate by 203 plus or minus 40 kilocalories per day, which is huge. You know, actually, that's a lot. That adds up.
That's
awesome.
It's like a pound every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that, Steve?
Well, it's
dangerous? What?
Well, there's no particular reason to think that it's dangerous. It doesn't increase your heart rate or anything like that, Jay. It just is increasing the amount. So brown fat burns calories to produce heat. Cold temperatures trigger metabolic activity in your brown fat for obvious reasons, to make heat and warm you up. People who have more brown fat tend to be thinner than people who have less brown fat. So researchers have been looking at ways of increasing the amount of brown fat that people have, you know, converting white fat into brown fat and increasing the metabolic activity of the brown fat that you do have, all as treatments for obesity. And this is one study in that type of research. And this is a pretty significant result. So if that higher dose turns out to be safe, there was no indication of any problems in this study, but again, it was in 12, you know, healthy young men. If, you know, in more of a representative population, we find that that dose is tolerable and safe and nothing unforeseen crops up, it may be a way of safely increasing the amount of calories that you burn just sitting there. definitely safer than stimulants, which is what you were thinking of, Jay. Stimulants increase your, not only your metabolism, but can increase your heart rate, et cetera. And it's definitely not a good way to lose weight.
You know? I'm watching out for our listeners, okay?
Yeah, no, I definitely would not recommend that. And again, this is not something I would recommend at this point either. There's only preliminary evidence, but it is encouraging. And, you know, we may get to the day where we could, you know, if people have a serious weight problem, we may be able to treat it just by adjusting their brown fat.
That's great.
Very cool.
Well, Bob, you're starting off the year with a solo win. Congratulations.
Thank you. 100%, baby.
Well, Evan, this is your inaugural week of hosting the Skeptical Quote of the Week. What do you got for us?
Well, that's right. And I come after some very great people who have done this segment before me. I cannot replace them. I can only succeed them. So with that said, here's this week's quote. Man, once surrendering his reason, has no remaining guard against absurdities the most monstrous, and like a ship without a rudder, is the sport of every wind. With such persons, gullibility, which they call faith, takes the helm from the hand of reason, and the mind becomes a wreck. That was written by Thomas Jefferson in 1822 in a letter to James Smith about Christian dogma. And Thomas Jefferson was, of course, the third president of the United States.
Yep. And he was a Unitarian. I think that's the context of that letter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you know that Thomas Jefferson was a big fan of macaroni?
Really?
Ha! Yep. So much so that he designed his own machine to make homemade macaroni. But sadly, he never actually constructed the machine. Instead, he just bought one from Paris and had it shipped to America.
Yeah. They also sent him a cap with a feather in it.
Wasn't that Yankee Doodle Dandy?
Oh, yeah,
wait, who was Yankee Doodle Dandy?
You?
I don't know.
Don't you know the lyrics? You are, Jay, Yankee. Right? I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Oh, it is. It's an adjective.
It's you.
It wasn't a guy. Okay.
Thomas Jefferson. I also read that Thomas Jefferson has been falsely credited with creating macaroni and cheese, the delicious meal that we know it today. But a little research helped me figure out that that is a myth. No, he did put cheese with his macaroni, but he was not the first one to do so. So he didn't.
I wish I could invent something so epic like mac and cheese, man. That would be so cool.
You think so?
I invented peanut butter and jelly.
Well, I do like that quote, though, Evan. I think it's a very good quote. I completely agree with it. The idea that without reason and critical thinking, there is no limit to the nonsense that somebody's mind can be blown to, you know?
That's right. And it will, if you think of the body sort of as a ship, or basically your lifetime as a ship of experiences, you know, if you don't have critical thinking, if you don't have rationality, if you're not grounded in reason, you're gonna go astray all over the place and have all sorts of problems. So it is a very, very telling quote, and well done by Thomas Jefferson. Well said.
Yeah, those guys.
Hey guys, I want to tell you something funny that I found out recently. Mm-hmm. A very good friend of mine was on a dating site. This happened this week. Was on a dating site, saw that this girl was a skeptic, and contacted her. And essentially, he said, hey, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Jay Nobel. I'm friends with him. And she's like, yeah, I do know who he is. And because of that, she ended up deciding to go out with him.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
And then
you're a matchmaker, Jay.
He sent me her profile, and she listed like her favorite people in the profile. And it was Randy, Carl Sagan, and Stephen Novella.
Oh, nice.
That's amazing.
That's just amazing. Decent company, I'd say.
Isn't that crack you up?
Yeah, it's cool.
So he's like, you're my wingman from across the country. You know, it's like, do what I can.
Your wingman. Yeah. That's cool.
Good stuff.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining me for the first show we're recording in 2015.
Great
well,
show,
thank
guys.
You, Steve. Yeah, it was a fun show. I'm happy to start 2015.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming up this year. We got our 500th episode in a few weeks, and then our 10-year anniversary with a 10-hour special.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually looking forward to the 10-hour special,
yeah,
I admit it.
I think it's going to be loads of fun. Too.
Absolutely.
So a lot of potential for a new year.
It'll be great.
All right, guys. Well, until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at theskepticsguide.org, where you will find the show notes as well as links to our blogs, videos, online forum, and other content. You can send us feedback or questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. Also, please consider supporting the SGU by visiting the store page on our website, where you will find merchandise, premium content, and subscription information. Our listeners are what make SGU possible.